Okay, this is talking with S.J. Parsons on 19 September 78 from John Baldwin's home in Cambridge to his home in Warwickshire in England.
Okay, could we begin by, if you could tell me what your background training was and how you first came in contact with radio astronomy?
Right. An electrical engineer graduating in 1939. Birmingham, and going into the army more or less by accident in late 1940, it was discovered I knew something about cathode ray tube oscillography, which I'd had a special interest, and was also very interested in radio work.
I see.
This caused me to be sent on the same course that Hay had joined. In fact, I think he was on the one immediately before me.
Yes.
And we were both invited to join the research group which was then being formed.
This course was for training in basic radar techniques? And
yes, it was. And there were people from all the scientific disciplines.
Right.
I think most of the people who went into research were either physicists, mathematicians, or engineers. Well, a few engineers, but most of them were physicists. A few, however, were biologists.
Right.
There was a great vogue for exploiting the newly numerate biologists of the day.
Uh-huh.
And they did a good job, I must say.
Now, this would be right at the beginning of the war, then?
In 1940.
Right.
40 and the beginning of 41, when this group was set up. There were two problems. One was to get scientific people into the field to try and put the radar equipment into good order. There were lots of operational problems arising.
Right.
And it was felt there was a need for scientifically trained people actually in the field. This was, as far as we were concerned, was concerned with anti-aircraft artillery work.
Right.
And there were similar arrangements being made for the RAF and for the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a three-part conga attack.
Right.
Improved the operational efficiency of radar equipment in all three services. And it's purely accidental that people like Hay and I landed up in the army side.
Right.
I was in uniform, he was a civilian.
I see.
He'd been pulled out of teaching, and I out of industry.
What level was he teaching at?
Oh, nothing very special, school teaching.
I see.
But there's a history attached to that which is of some interest. He was one of the brighter chaps at university, as I understand it. But there were no jobs in the early 30s.
Right.
He graduated in 1930.
Which university was that?
Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
He worked under Lawrence Bragg at Manchester.
I see.
On crystallography.
Right.
Got a research degree, but there was no scope for him afterwards, so he had to go into school teaching. And the war, to him, was a great release.
Mm-hmm.
From the humdrum teaching, which he'd never been really interested in.
Right, right.
I was much younger, well, 9 years younger, and that was the beginning of my professional career.
Right.
But I, too, found it an exciting world, I must confess.
Yes.
Right, you go ahead next.
Well, okay, well, I don't want to go into great detail about what you did in the war, just the flavor of it, but in particular, it was in early 1942 when this supposed German jamming occurred in the radars all along the coast. And now, were you involved at all in trying to figure out what was causing that, or was?
Yes, but there was genuine jamming in the Scharnhorst and Gneisenau period of going up the channel.
When those ships were going through the English Channel, yes.
That's right. And that was the start of our jamming watch.
I see.
And we were much involved, and I was certainly in setting up the station we had at Dover, which then continued to almost the end of the war.
So the Germans had transmitters on the French coast?
That's right. They had a number of them, and we were able to locate them with simple DF techniques.
And then, send bombers to them, or?
No. We didn't locate them with that precision, and they weren't sufficiently serious. We found ways and means of overcoming it.
I see. So it was quite natural, then, when you got this interference in February 42, that it was just some new jamming.
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
That was thought to be the case by anti-aircraft command, but this was all over the country, and particularly, I remember, in the central east coast.
Yes.
That it was noted. And it was purely by deduction from the bearings reported by the batteries, in which I was especially interested, because my special responsibility was the calibration of the radar equipment.
Right.
And things of this kind came to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that once this looked like the sun, and it was Hay who said, if so, this is something we've been looking for or thinking about for years. He said in one of his books that there's been attempts for 50 years before to detect radiation.
So even at that stage he knew about these attempts to detect the sun?
Yes.
I see.
But we collected all the data, and it was deduced it was most likely the sun and not jamming.
Mm-hmm.
This was recorded, and there was a memorandum which incorporated this.
Right.
Run on a very limited distribution, as I can recall, but nobody would believe it.
I see.
Because they couldn't detect it on subsequent occasions, you see.
But now, you had gone to the trouble to see if there was optical activity on that day, had you not?
We did later.
Oh, that was only later. That was only later, I see.
Yes, it was later when there was a little more time.
Right.
Fresh.
I see. So you couldn't make the argument, well, it was, you don't find it normally because there's not usually a really active group on it.
That's right. No, we didn't, we weren't able
didn't
to
make that step.
Real time on it. It was at the back of our mind,
mm-hmm.
particularly Hay, I think, that this must be followed up when we had the opportunity.
Right.
But there were much more pressing.
Oh, of course. To say the least. But in any case, you say the military people were reluctant to believe it.
Yes, and the one or two people who were with whom it was discussed, I think Appleton was brought in that day.
Uh-huh.
Several other people, and they didn't believe it.
Well,
I wouldn't put it as strongly as that, but they were skeptical.
They were skeptical, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In any case, did this have an effect during the war at other times? Was this effect seen? Or did it have any operational importance? Or
no, that was the only time when it did.
Just that isolated instance.
Yes, that's right. Mind you, I think there were many occasions when it could have done, but it wasn't recognized.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we were plagued with problems of poor performance, and it could, on many occasions, this it could have been.
Yes.
Reduced by this background noise.
Right, right. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the war, and can you describe to me how the transition took place to working on other than wartime projects?
It's difficult to describe exactly how it arose. We were still very busy on the performance of our equipment. We were busy planning for the Japanese war. We were beginning to take an interest in it.
Right, because of course one didn't know how long that was going to go on, right?
No, that's right. At that time, it looked as if that might go on for some considerable period, and a few of us, myself included, were preparing to go to India to carry on some of our other work. I was beginning to work on field army detection methods, for example.
Uh-huh.
That shell detection shells in flight and so forth. This led us back, really, to the limits of performance of the equipment.
Right.
And this, in turn, led us to look back at this period when, the 1942 period, when there'd been what we believed to be solar radiation limiting the performance of our equipment.
Right.
And by then, we learned a great deal more about relatively high power aerial, high gain aerial.
Right.
We knew how to build yardages for low frequencies. And it was more or less as an experiment to see what we could achieve with the older equipment, which had really been superseded by anemometric equipment.
Right.
We built large yardages. And it was then we discovered that we were getting cosmic noise in a big way.
So your purpose then in going back to this older equipment was not to measure the sky noise, but what exactly was it then?
We wanted to see what the limits on the performance were.
Whatever they might be caused by.
And whether in fact this earlier problem in 1942 really was solar radiation.
Mm-hmm.
If we were going to get 12 dB or more power gain, we ought to be able to see rather more of the sun than
right.
Has been possible in 1942.
Right.
And of course, what we got firstly was fluctuations which were obviously related, were extraterrestrial.
Right.
Obvious straight away by rotating the equipment. And we quickly found, too, that we were getting useful signals from the quiescent sun.
Right. Now, this was at 5 meters, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
Let me go back a step. Did you at all learn about Jansky and or Reber's work in 1942, now, when you had the sun detection?
I should think No, I think Appleton then said that...
Pointed that out. Because you said that Hay knew about the unsuccessful solar attempts,
right.
And so he must have known also about the success of Jansky, and
that's right.
Perhaps also Reber had published a couple things in the late 30s.
I think he had at that stage.
Yeah, he had in 39 in Proceedings of the IRE and in 40
in
Astrophysical Journal. But it probably wasn't as well known as Jansky's work.
No, that's true. We knew about Reber by the time we were taking it up seriously.
Right. So,
mind you, there were one or two other pointers in this brain.
Yes.
And I recall that Eastwood... Have you made any contact with Eastwood?
No. Who is he now?
Eastwood was in... 60 group, I think it was, of the RAF, doing work on the performance of the chain long-range detection station.
Right.
The RAF had, chain CHL. He eventually became chief engineer of Marconi's, director of engineering of Marconi's, Marconi English Electric,
mm-hmm.
president of the IE.
I see.
During the war, he had experience of two sets of phenomena and problems with their ground-based equipment. And this was anomalous propagation when they got very long-range performance, but also sometimes a great increase in clutter from the sea.
Right.